in the United States District Court for the District of Delaware. State of New York by Attorney General Andrew M. Cuomo, Plaintiff, versus Intel Corporation, a Delaware corporation, defendant. Introduction. Intel has engaged in a systematic worldwide campaign of illegal, exclusionary conduct to maintain its monopoly power and prices in the market for x86 microprocessors, the brains of personal computers, PCs. By exacting exclusive or near-exclusive agreements from large computer makers, original equipment manufacturers, or OEMs, in exchange for payments totaling billions of dollars, and threatening retaliation against any company that did not heed its wishes, Intel robbed its competitors of the opportunity to challenge Intel's dominance in key segments of the market. This illegal behavior was highly detrimental to consumers, competition, and innovation. Starting in 2001, the threat from competition became salient at Intel. Intel's biggest CPU competitor, Advanced Micro Devices, Incorporated, AMD, had begun developing x86 chips that not only competed with Intel's offerings, but were in many ways more desirable. Business customers and consumers increasingly sought AMD-based computers. OEMs began to comply. In response, Intel launched an illegal campaign to deprive AMD of distribution channels and consumers of product choice and lower prices. In order to achieve exclusivity or severe limitations on an OEM's purchase and offering in AMD products, Intel paid hundreds of millions, in some cases billions, of dollars in rebates. Although Intel tried to disguise the anti-competitive nature of these payments, they bore no genuine relationship to pro-competitive volume-based discounts or reasonable efforts to meet specific competitive offers. At the same time, Intel threatened OEMs with retaliation if they persisted in dealing with AMD. These threats took a variety of forms, including funding an OEM's competitors to directly compete against it, ending any current payments that the OEM received from Intel, and ending joint development ventures. The OEMs, struggling with narrow profit margins and fearing that Intel would retaliate by subsidizing their competitors to undersell them, often conformed to Intel's demands. For example, in exchange for billions of dollars in rebate payments and other benefits, Dell agreed not to sell any AMD products from 2001 to 2006. When Intel could not prevent OEMs from dealing with AMD altogether, it generally succeeded in greatly limiting the extent to which the OEMs brought AMD-based products to market. In 2002, Intel reached an agreement with HP, subsequently extended to 2004, which, in exchange for hundreds of millions of dollars, capped HP's sales of AMD-based business desktop PCs at 5%. Guaranteeing Intel 95%. Intel also exacted agreements from HP limiting the ways in which HP could distribute AMD's products, thereby inhibiting AMD's ability to reach even the 5% mark. Moreover, in the highly profitable server microprocessor market, after being offered a $130 million payout from Intel and receiving various threats, IBM agreed to cancel one planned AMD-based product entirely and to market another only on an unbranded basis. By these means and others, Intel has distorted competition and harmed consumers, depriving them of the lower prices and increased rates of innovation which competition would have yielded. Absent Intel's illegal acts, prices would likely have been lower, product innovation more dynamic, and consumer gains greater. Nothing in the antitrust laws or this action seeks to prevent Intel from competing on the merits by innovating and improvising its products, as Intel has often done in the past, or by genuine price cuts. But Intel has instead used threats and coercion, bribing and bullying to preserve its market dominance. In a market which is itself a driver of productivity growth, This harm to competition radiates throughout the economy, decreasing productivity gains. This action therefore seeks injunctive relief to restrain Intel's anti-competitive conduct, prevent its reoccurrence in the future, and to restore the competition which was lost. It also seeks damages on behalf of New York State consumers and governmental entities. Intel's monopoly power. Intel is a durable and extraordinarily powerful monopoly. For over a decade, it has had extremely high market shares, measured at approximately 80 to 90% by revenue and 75% by unit volume. All major computer manufacturers depend on Intel in a variety of ways and are reliant on it for its microprocessors, since AMD is, and in the foreseeable future will remain, unable to fulfill more than a small share of their requirements. Intel's monopoly power is protected by the extremely high barriers to entry into the x86 microprocessor market. First, design and manufacture of microprocessors requires access to intellectual property which only Intel and AMD have, so that substantial licensing issues would arise for any potential entrant. Second, manufacturing facilities for microprocessors, fabs, cost billions of dollars to design and construct, not to mention a great deal of time and regulatory approval. Third, this is an industry characterized by economies of scale, so that smaller manufacturers are at a cost disadvantage and often have difficulty achieving profits. Intel is extremely profitable. In contrast, the margins of its primary customers, the top-tier OEMs, tend to be thin, often in low single digits. This enables Intel to directly affect OEMs' bottom-line quarterly profits by favoring certain OEMs with lower prices and other subsidies, while punishing others. Intel's profits on its microprocessors reflect its monopoly power, as the OEMs that are compelled to do business with it know. A May 2002 internal HP document comparing Intel's profitability with the narrow profit margins of OEMs noted that Intel has margins of a monopoly. Michael Dell, founder and CEO of Dell, Intel's largest customer, pointed out in a February 2004 internal email that not even Microsoft could exercise the pricing power which Intel has displayed. Quote, Intel profits in the second half of 2001 were $1.397 billion on revenues of $13.528 billion. In the second half of 2003, they were $4.885 billion on revenues of $16.574 billion. In other words, their sales went up 22.5% and their profits went up 350%. Or said another way, their revenues went up $3.046 billion and their profits went up $3.488 billion. Not even Microsoft can do that. In other words, these guys have massive operating leverage, end quote. OEMs also depend on Intel in such vital matters as allocation of products, marketing support, and access to technical information. An internal 2002 HP document presentation slide noted that, regardless of scenario, Intel's monopoly will likely be sustained because of Intel's 1. Relationships. PC manufacturers, distributors, ISVs, independent software vendors, BIOS, basic input slash output system suppliers, etc., exert substantial influence over PC manufacturers and their channels of distribution through the Intel Inside Brand Program and other marketing programs. 2. Technology. Design capabilities for microprocessors, memory, chipsets, etc. 3. Resources. Manufacturing, R&D, marketing. And 4. Control of industry standards. Intel has been able to control x86 microprocessor and PC system standards. can dictate type of products market requires of Intel's competitors. Intel also created alliances with major OEMs, which give it substantial leverage over these OEMs. Because OEMs rely on Intel's active participation in these alliances in the form of funding, marketing, and intellectual property, OEMs cannot easily disregard Intel's wishes. At the highest levels, Intel routinely takes steps to make its displeasure felt when it feels threatened by OEM actions, even when those actions appear to be routine commercial behavior. Intel's customers are constantly reminded where their primary loyalty should lie. For example, in March 2006, Intel CEO Paul Otellini received a courtesy heads-up from an HP executive that HP was sponsoring an advertisement featuring HP's relationship with AMD and the theme of customer choice. Otellini reacted, quote, "So, why did you feel compelled to do this? It is certainly insulting to us, and I do not see how it helps you. If we are your key partner, this is nothing but a slap at us. I really don't want to get in a pissing contest over this. But running an ad touting 10 years with AMD and choice is not the behavior of someone who wants to bring our two companies together," end quote. Similarly, in November 2004, Otellini directly expressed his displeasure at increases in IBM's AMD Opteron server sales to a senior IBM executive and reminded him of IBM's reliance on Intel. Quote, "I just saw the sales tracker data for Q3. IBM Opteron shipments in 2P dual processor servers doubled from 3.5 thousand units to 7.5 thousand units. IBM was the fastest growing Opteron system seller. It is a bit disheartening to see IBM outgrow both Sun and HP in Opteron shipments given our current engagement," end quote. Intel's exertion of monopoly power. Intel seeks to limit AMD's advances. Faced with AMD's advances, Intel took steps to ensure that consumers would have limited opportunity to buy AMD's products. It accomplished this by bribing or coercing OEMs either not to offer or to severely limit AMD CPUs. This took place in the context of regular quarterly negotiations between OEMs and Intel, in which each OEM was in the position of one among several competitors, and Intel was, with respect to each of them, in the position of its essential and irreplaceable supplier. Because Intel disposed of the monopoly power and resources described above, advanced knowledge of technical developments, ability to control supply, and above all, the ability to grant or withhold rebate payments and marketing money, Intel was in a position in which it could virtually dictate the terms of its deals. Intel's customers understood Intel's power and its strategy. As an internal HP document concluded in November 2003, quote, "In this market, Intel dictates the rules of the game, and most of their actions can be understood in the context of keeping their distribution outlets, their customers, in line," end quote. Intel's acts and objectives were therefore radically different from legitimate marketing of its own products. Instead, Intel eliminated opportunities for AMD to gain sales, even when Intel's own sales would not directly benefit consumers. For example, Intel paid HP, as part of a 2002 agreement between the companies, to delay the launch of AMD-based commercial desktop PCs for a six-month period in Europe and for a period of at least 2 months in Latin America. And Intel repeatedly pressured OEMs to guarantee its specified market shares of their sales, to ensure that OEMs' marketing decisions would be controlled by Intel, rather than responsive to consumer demands. Thus, Intel entered into an agreement with HP, which capped AMD's share of the commercial desktop segment at 5% of HP's worldwide sales. The cap provision was suppressed and kept secret, but numerous drafts, subsequent emails, and testimony confirmed that it was central to the agreement and was observed by HP and enforced by Intel. In another 2006 agreement with HP, Intel effectively ensured that its share of HP's overall sales would increase and AMD's would decrease. In all cases, however, Intel attempted to erase the most obvious traces of its anti-competitive scheme by eliminating crucial but flagrantly objectionable provisions, such as the 5% cap, from written agreements, while nevertheless subsequently enforcing them, or altering language so that agreements about market shares were camouflaged as agreements regarding volume targets. The email request of the Intel executive who negotiated a 2006 deal with HP is typical. Quote, could you also take the mess, market segment share, references off, and just leave everything at volume targets? Our counsel is very picky on that stuff. End quote. Intel sought and frequently reached such agreements despite its awareness of antitrust risk. In the context of Intel's negotiations with NEC, a Japanese OEM, an Intel executive in December 2002 asked for new documentation because, quote, the original email minutes from the May meeting shows MSS target, and we can't use it, where it exposes us to antitrust risk, end quote. The basic quid pro quo, which Intel sought, was invariably clear. Exclusion of competition was rewarded with valuable inducements, which were withheld if the OEM's cooperation was not forthcoming. This conditionality was Intel's basic modus operandi, as illustrated by the following exchange in May of 2002 between two Intel executives reacting, during negotiations with Sony, to the news that Intel was getting hammered in the value segment by AMD in the marketplace. The first executive inquired, quote, can another Intel representative discreetly hint to Sony that the core marketing dollars are at risk if Intel's MSS with Sony in the value segment does not improve? End quote. The second responded, quote, we should not be shy about our unhappiness with our current MSS, intimating that the program is in jeopardy. If they don't get their act together and work with us on this, is clearly okay. End quote. A favorite Intel code word for the degree of exclusivity Intel desired from the OEMs was alignment. If they were not aligned, OEMs could not expect favorable treatment from Intel with respect to rebates, technological development, pricing concessions, priority in obtaining supplies of scarce parts, or marketing funds. As one Intel executive reported to another in April 2002 regarding negotiations with Sony, quote, I also told him that Intel would really have to make sure Sony and Intel are well aligned before we commit to doing this kind of co-marketing program. If we can get Sony to agree on better alignment, MSS recovery, and USNB, United States notebook computers, no more surprises, then we can move forward with co-marketing discussion. If not, we may have to think about alternatives. End quote. Similarly, a top HP executive reported back from a conversation with Intel's then COO Paul Otellini concerning Intel's reaction to the news that HP was considering launching an AMD-based PC directed at commercial customers. Quote, I talked to Paul Otellini last night, who asked whether we have a transactional relationship or a partnership. If we go with AMD on the commercial desktop, Intel equates this to a transactional relationship, and therefore we are foregoing the benefits of price pull forwards, pricing concessions, to level the direct / indirect playing field. End quote. Continuing on Section 2, Paragraph 55, Intel's Antitrust Compliance Program. Intel's illegal conduct occurred despite its much-touted antitrust compliance program. As described in the Harvard Business Review, June 2001, the program featured mock raids and staged cross-examinations of Intel managers before audiences of other executive staff. One of the don'ts said to be inculcated by the program was no exclusive contracts when microprocessors were concerned. Whatever the intention, internal Intel email strongly suggests that the actual effect of the program was to school Intel executives in cover-up rather than compliance. In some instances, Intel executives were told to use less transparent language to mask their tactics because of legal or antitrust concerns. Notably absent is any suggestion that the conduct itself, paying for exclusivity, might be objectionable. In a December 2001 internal email, for example, an Intel executive was warned against drafting documents which asked for customers for a certain MSS market share target. MSS gets in your list will create a legal concern. We cannot leave the document, which asks customers for a certain MSS target. Instead of MSS, we could implicitly build that idea in. Example, minimum unit requirement. Continuing section 3, paragraph 60. OEM's reasons for collaborating with Intel. During the relevant period, OEMs understood that they would benefit from increased competition in the microprocessor market. If a competitor such as AMD could establish itself as a genuine alternative to Intel, they and customers would enjoy more choices, lower prices, and better products. Nevertheless, they frequently decided, when faced with the array of incentives and threats which Intel brought to bear, to collaborate with Intel in restricting their purchases from AMD. There were several reasons for this. The most basic was that the payments for exclusivity Intel provided could make the difference between profit or loss for an OEM or a segment of its business. In 2002 to 2004, for example, HP's business desktop unit depended significantly on Intel rebate payments for its financial success. In September 2004, HP executives considered whether to continue to adhere to a deal that they had struck with Intel in 2002 to limit HP's marketing of AMD-based commercial desktop PCs by, among other things, agreeing to sell AMD-based PCs directly only, rather than through distributors. A senior HP executive vetoed the plan on the ground that Intel would detect any cheating and that Intel's rebate payments were essential for the HP division involved to make it financially. Dell's profitability also came to depend on Intel rebate payments. This was dramatically illustrated by internal Intel emails in April 2004, arising from Dell's need to finalize its earnings forecast for the coming quarter. Essentially, Dell asked Intel for an additional $100 million. Without it, as an Intel executive reported, Dell would readjust their margin guidance downward. In other words, Dell would advise investors that it expected lower earnings. As Dell and HP both learned, once an OEM accepted Intel rebate payments as a substitute for marketing AMD-based products, it became very difficult to break the habit. Dell, on several occasions, assessed whether purchasing from AMD would be likely to improve its profitability. Dell's estimates of Intel's likely reaction, however, loaded the scales against AMD, because Dell assumed, with good reason, that those reactions could well be severe and disproportionate. In a February 27, 2003 internal Dell document, for example, it was assumed that aggressive purchases by Dell from AMD could result in retaliatory rebate reductions by Intel that could be severe and prolonged with impact to all LOBs, lines of business. Another Dell document from March 2003 concluded that anticipated Intel response wipes out all potential Op Inc. operating income upside from going with AMD. Moreover, Intel did not hesitate to threaten severe punishment for OEMs which marketed AMD in ways that Intel disapproved. Even large and powerful firms, such as IBM, took those threats seriously. In 2003, for example, one IBM executive expressed doubts about the advisability of a proposed deal with AMD, which would involve IBM marketing assistance, because Intel retaliation could severely damage IBM's multi-billion-dollar business in low-end, industry-standard servers, its X-Series line. Quote, it became clear to me that if we did all that on the marketing side for AMD, Intel would kill our X-Series business, end quote. Later, in 2005, a senior IBM executive faced a similar issue. Key IBM customers wanted IBM to expand its line of AMD products, but a negative Intel reaction would put IBM in a very difficult spot. The executive wrote, quote, I understand the point about the accounts wanting a full AMD portfolio. The question is, can we afford to accept the wrath of Intel? Is a very hard question to deal with, end quote. Continuing at paragraph 71. Because of the importance of the microprocessor market for the nation's entire economy, Intel's illegal conduct has far-ranging economic consequences. The microprocessor's importance derives from its status as an engine of productivity growth throughout wide segments of the economy. Technical progress and the accompanying price declines in these products have been largely responsible for the widespread affordability and availability of modern information technology. Economists agree that these developments have spurred wealth-creating productivity growth. But only competition can ensure that these benefits are fully passed to consumers and that innovations are not suppressed because they do not conform to a monopolist business plan. Intel has gravely injured competition, consumers, and innovation with consequences which extend throughout the economy as a whole. Intel's campaign of anti-competitive conduct was worldwide. Intel was most active in the United States, Europe, and Asia, the centers of microprocessor production, marketing, and consumption. Set forth below are summaries of some of Intel's exclusionary acts involving three particularly important U.S.-based OEMs, Dell, HP, and IBM. But there is abundant evidence that Intel's anti-competitive acts involve many other firms and other distribution channels for microprocessors. Continue at Section 5, Paragraph 92, The Boomerang Episode. Dell periodically considered launching AMD-based products, notwithstanding Intel's fierce opposition. But its fear of Intel's reaction, based on Intel's explicit and implicit threats, counseled strongly against any action. For example, in 2002, a Dell team explored a potential switch to AMD for some of Dell's CPU needs in a project codenamed Boomerang. The study concluded first that AMD offers a significant margin opportunity for Dell's Dimension and Inspiron platforms on account of price, cost, and customer demand factors. But the Boomerang study also identified Intel's reaction as a key question in the analysis and discussed the potential opportunity costs given Dell's exclusive relationship with Intel. The study asked whether MOAP payments to Dell would increase or decrease, and over what time period, short-term versus long-term? The Boomerang study attempted to quantify the projected margin benefit from adopting AMD, concluding that up to 32% of MOAP program could be risked before Intel's retaliation in the form of reduced MOAP would outweigh the benefits of switching certain platforms to AMD CPUs. The key Dell executive acting as informal liaison between the two companies commented on the results of the Boomerang study. He warned that the worst case downside scenario is that Intel would eliminate $250 million of Dell Meet Comp MOAP for some period, and moreover, that Intel would give this MOAP to competitors to ensure that Intel does not lose market share to a Dell AMD system. The net effect would be that Dell would not only lose $250 million, we probably have to do incremental discounting on our Intel platforms against competitors who would now be subsidized with an extra $250 million from Intel. A confirming contemporaneous internal Intel email from Intel's Dell account representative to top Intel executives states that Dell must be made to understand two things. First, that Intel's payments to Dell would decrease if they have AMD in their arsenal. Second, that Dell should be warned of the possibility that MCP dollars that were applied to Dell could go somewhere else if Dell starts to offer AMD-based products. The message was apparently conveyed in fact. A Dell executive testified that, at the time of the boomerang analysis, Intel had conveyed the concept of their statement back that, as long as Dell is Intel only, our discount structure is what it is. He added that he understood from Intel that, if there was a change in our Intel-only status, then our discount program would have to be revisited. Under these circumstances, Dell decided not to launch AMD-based products at that time. A Dell executive who was responsible for the analytics and cost assumptions of the Boomerang study testified to the Attorney General that concern about Intel's reaction was a substantial part of that decision. Continuing at Section 8, Paragraph 107. Dell's quarterly profit margins depended on Intel's payments. One of the reasons that Dell remained unwilling to offer AMD-based products was that Dell's quarterly profit margins had become dependent on Intel's payments. A comparison of Dell's reported net income with the rebates it received from Intel for some quarterly periods show that, by 2004, the rebate payments amounted to more than a third of Dell's earnings. For the three-month period between August and October of 2004, Dell received approximately $304 million in rebates from Intel and reported income of $846 million, so that the rebates amounted to 36% of net income. Thereafter, the proportion of rebates to net income rose steeply. In 2006, Dell received approximately $1.9 billion in rebates from Dell, and in two quarterly periods of that year, rebate payments exceeded reported net income. From February to April of 2006, rebates, $805 million, amounted to 104% of net income, $776 million. The following 3 months, between May and July of 2006, the proportion was even higher, 116%, $554 million of rebates, and $480 million in net income. In one instance, Dell asked Intel to retroactively increase the size of its payment to stabilize Dell's forecasted earnings. In several early Sunday morning emails in April 2004, Intel's Austin-based Dell lead negotiator alerted top Intel executives to an urgent Dell request regarding our meet comp response for Dell considering new data from MSD, Michael Dell, on Friday. Dell needed to finalize its margin forecast for the coming quarter, but needed direction from Intel. Dell is finalizing their call the quarter today. They need direction from us. They are asking for $100 upside to old MC deal. Anything below 90 likely to force them to lower numbers. Later the same day, another Intel executive clarified Dell's request in an email directed to Paul Otellini, who was Intel's chief operating officer at the time. He informed Otellini that Dell had assumed that its new agreement with Intel for increased subsidies would be retroactive to the beginning of its current fiscal year in February. Now, with an additional $100 million payable in Dell's current quarter, Dell will be forced to revise its margin guidance downward. What they, Dell, really want, an additional $100 million payable in their fiscal quarter, which ends in April. This is incremental to our old deal and would mean a total April payout of $167 million, $155 million. They will readjust their margin guidance downward without this additional meet comp request. They had made the assumption we would do the deal retro to the beginning of their fiscal in February. In an April 8th email to Michael Dell and Kevin Rollins, Dell's lead negotiator with Intel described the outcome of Dell's request to Intel as follows. The only disappointment is that we didn't get $93 million in our quarter one. We got what we needed to meet expectations, $60 million, in the form of increased MCP and programs. We didn't get enough to exceed our earnings expectations. I think we got all we could in one 30-day period. As this episode shows, Intel's payments to Dell did not benefit consumers through better products, more efficient collaboration between the two companies, or lower prices. Instead, Intel was simply paying Dell to unfairly exclude AMD and thereby maintain Intel's monopoly profits. Continuing at Section 11, Paragraph 130. The pressure builds, leading to even greater Intel payments to Dell. In the summer of 2005, Intel and Dell held another round of rebate negotiations. This came as no surprise to Intel, which was well aware that Dell blamed Intel's inferior server products for its own lost sales and profits. In one internal Intel email, an Intel executive imagined the following response by Dell's lead negotiator to Intel's attempts to sell Dell more high-end server CPUs. If I was him, here's how I would respond. I'm losing, expletive deletive, MSS market segment share because your CPU sucks and your chipset sucks. I'm losing because HP is using AMD's Opteron and IBM has IBM's own chipset product, which is killing Intel's chipset product. It's your crap Intel that is causing me to lose. He further imagined Dell arguing, and you want me to spend more money on a stale 5-year-old platform, and others will have superior technology? I know I'm a dumb old Texan, but that even sounds stupid to me. In early August 2005, Intel's Dell account representative emailed Intel's CEO, Ottolini. Drums are starting to beat again. We'll need to discuss next steps. I'm in the camp of no more unless they dramatically change their behavior. They've realized they're all in a hole this quarter and are initiating negotiations. Shortly thereafter, Ottolini reported back on a telephone conversation with Dell's CEO, Kevin Rollins. I had my call with Kevin yesterday. It went well. He did not ask for money. He called to tell me that Dell is still committed to selling up and moving to the high end. He did say that Dell's lead negotiator would work with Intel's Dell account representative to find out if there was a win-win deal in selling up. I have no idea what that means. Intel's Dell account representative responded, the 10,000-pound gorilla is what he didn't say. He wants to renegotiate their MCP deal. Starting in their FQ3, Dell's third fiscal quarter, that's their idea of a win-win sell-up deal. They want to maintain their historical meat comp consumption. I don't, unless they change. Even then I'm cautious. I've told Dell's lead negotiator and the rest at Dell that we don't want another opportunistic, hollow commitment. I'm told they want to evolve into a much more collaborative relationship. We'll see. In the following months, Ottolini also had increasingly emotional and frank exchanges with Michael Dell himself. On November 4, 2005, Ottolini reported internally in a confidential, do not forward email about one of the most emotional calls I have ever had with Michael Dell. In this email, Ottolini wrote, Michael Dell opened by saying, I am tired of losing business. He repeated 3 to 4 times. I said nothing and waited. He has been traveling around the USA. He feels they are losing all the high margin business to AMD-based SKUs. He is tired of being behind for 4 years. When I protested that it was 2, he said, no, the last 2, this year and next year. As a result, Dell is no longer seen as a thought leader. On November 10, 2005, Michael Dell followed up with an email to Ottolini. We have lost the performance leadership and it's seriously impacting our business in several areas. Ottolini's reply, there's nothing new here. our product roadmap is what it is. It is improving rapidly daily. It will deliver increasingly leadership products. Additionally, we are transferring over $1 billion per year to Dell for Meet Comp efforts. This was judged by your team to be more than sufficient to compensate for the competitive issues, emphasis added. Michael Dell, however, continued to press home to Intel its performance deficit and its effects on Dell. On November 24, 2005, he capped an email exchange with Ottolini by writing, "None of the current benchmarks and reviews say that Intel-based systems are better than AMD. We are losing the hearts, minds, and wallets of our best customers." Meanwhile, Intel increased its payment to Dell to an unprecedented level. According to figures provided by Dell, Intel's payments, $471 million, amounted to 78% of Dell's reported net income, $606 million, for the period August to October 2005. On February 16, 2006, Intel took note of a service report in which Dell's CEO, Kevin Rollins, had said that Dell had made no plans to begin using AMD chips. "Finally, something positive," commented one Intel executive. Ottolini commented, "The best friend money can buy," emphasis added. By April 2006, Dell's relationship with Intel reached a breaking point. As Michael Dell wrote, "Intel, we overestimated both their ability to execute and our true competitive position with them, and we underestimated AMD. And we relied too much on rebates from Intel." Dell was finally ready to act, despite the pressure and incentives from Intel. In an April 29th email to other top Dell executives, Michael Dell wrote, "We've been looking at the situation for a long time and have decided to introduce a broad range of AMD-based systems into our product line to provide the choice our customers are asking for." The reaction of Craig Barrett, Intel's board chairman, was unequivocal. Dell should immediately be deprived of the payments it had long enjoyed in return for its willingness not to offer AMD products and should start paying list prices. Barrett told Ottolini, "They have just signaled they're only interested in being a transaction-based customer. I think you should reply in kind. Not a time for weakness on our part. Stop writing checks immediately and put them back on the list price ASAP," emphasis added. The direction Ottolini gave his subordinates the next day was consistent with Barrett's advice. Intel should make clear to Dell that if Dell offered any AMD products, all the MCP payments Dell received from Intel would be at risk, just as Dell has always feared. "We should be prepared to remove all MCP and related programs. Post haste, then we ought to enter negotiations," emphasis added. But at Dell, Intel's anti-competitive strategy of paying Dell not to deal with AMD had at long last become too destructive for the company and its client base, which was increasingly demanding AMD products. As one Dell executive wrote on May 12, 2006, to Dell's CEO Kevin Rollins, "We are getting slammed with missing our numbers and not announcing anything with AMD. Conversely, Intel is not giving us enough money to make Q2 EPS, second quarter earnings per share, and our current plan of record for Q2 is to beg them for more money to make our targets. My vote is to announce AMD now if they do not cooperate this week." As Intel had done with other OEMs who were determined to introduce AMD products, it attempted to severely limit the range of the AMD products that would be offered. In May, Intel sought a deal with Dell in which Dell would make an AMD announcement, but limited to multiprocessor servers and remain all Intel for all other lines through this year, as Ottolini informed Intel's board of directors. Under that deal, Intel was to make further payments to Dell in return for continued exclusivity outside the multiprocessor server segment. Dell's Rollins wrote in a June 1, 2006 email that he was trying to get $250 million still from Intel, But they, Intel, are asking for a commitment to exclusivity for the rest of the year to get the money. Despite this agreement, by September 2006, Dell realized that it could no longer limit its introduction of AMD to this segment if it wanted to retain its market share. Accordingly, in September, it announced further AMD products. Intel's retaliation was massive. For February, March, and April of 2006, Intel had paid Dell approximately $800 million in rebates. In a three-month period from November 2006 through January 2007, after it had first offered an AMD-based product, Dell received less than $200 million in rebates. In Intel's view, the end of the exclusive relationship it had had with Dell opened opportunities elsewhere, specifically with another OEM, Lenovo. In a read-and-destroy email to a top Lenovo executive, "I am asking you as a matter of trust to read and delete it," Intel's Ottolini suggested that Lenovo could benefit from the same kind of relationship. "Any meet comp program we may have had with Dell will get nullified as they introduce competition. This opens vistas of opportunity for Lenovo / Intel they have only hinted at in the past. This represents an inflection point for Lenovo." Section D, Intel's Exclusionary Acts, Hewlett-Packard. Unlike Dell, Hewlett-Packard, HP, marketed some AMD-based products on a limited basis continuously throughout the period from 2000 to the present. Nevertheless, HP's relationship with Intel shared many of the same carrot and stick characteristics as Dell. HP would announce that it was thinking of expanding its relationship with AMD. Intel would then threaten HP with reducing its payments or canceling key joint ventures, and Intel would then increase its payments in exchange for, in this case, near exclusivity. The result was that HP was careful to calibrate and, when necessary, restrict its marketing of AMD-based products so as not to cross Intel-drawn red lines and to obtain benefits which only Intel could offer. Most notably, as detailed below, in 2002, HP agreed to impose a 5% cap on its marketing of AMD-based commercial desktop PCs, guaranteeing Intel 95% of its requirements, in exchange for $130 million in rebate payments. In 2006, HP agreed to enter into a company-wide agreement with Intel, which limited AMD's share of HP's CPU purchases for Intel's benefit. Continue at Section 2, Paragraph 157, HP's fear of Intel's retaliation. Despite the upside to the change, in contemplating the decision, senior HP executives weighed what they feared would be Intel's retaliatory countermeasures. They understood that an AMD deal would be considered a watershed event by Intel because it would legitimize AMD in the lucrative enterprise space. As a senior HP executive noted in April 2002, no other major supplier is offering a business SKU with AMD in it. Another HP executive noted in May 2002, "Intel's worst fear will be a sufficient ramp of commercial Athlon and AMD microprocessor product, such that it becomes legitimized for commercial markets. Once AMD is out of the box, Intel cannot put it back in. To that end, we expect swift price pressure so that we never fully get out of the chute. Intel can't afford to lower industry prices, so they will pick their largest partner, Dell, as their instrument." An internal HP memorandum concurred that Intel feared HP would validate AMD in the business market. Another motivation for Intel to keep AMD out of the business market is the fear that if AMD penetrates successfully with HP, it would help to validate AMD as good enough for enterprise deployments. Today, nobody gets fired for specifying Intel. Accordingly, in order to protect itself, HP suggested that AMD would establish a fund of $75 million, which HP could use to hold itself harmless if Intel retaliated against it. Specifically, HP proposed that AMD will establish a fund of $25 million per quarter for the first three quarters of the agreement, which HP can draw from as a compensation for potential retaliatory acts from Intel. Such acts may include unusual discounts that Intel may provide to an HP competitor targeting and impacting HPQ's PC business, or the unusual loss of discounts or other market development funds from Intel as a result of execution of this agreement. AMD reacted to this unusual demand with an even greater offer, underlying the lengths to which it felt compelled to go to obtain distribution for its products. If, as proposed, HP would agree to a 3-year deal, AMD would provide HP with 1 million Athlon XP processors at a net price of zero during the first year of the program. Section 3, Intel's reaction. Once Intel found out about HP's plans, it reacted by directly threatening HP in an area where HP felt extremely vulnerable. A joint HP/Intel development project named Itanium, or IPF, Itanium Processor Family. Itanium was a proprietary, for example, non-x86 server microprocessor technology which HP expected will provide the backbone for its future high-end server business and affect other segments of its business. Without Intel's cooperation, the Itanium project would founder, a devastating prospect for HP. HP knew that Intel, unlike HP, had other choices besides the Itanium project which it could pursue. As a November 2003 internal HP analysis recognized, Itanium is more important to HP's future server and workstation business success than it is to Intel. Far ahead of the other major competitors, HP already burned the lifeboats with respect to its own proprietary server chip development and is fully committed to Itanium across its high-end server product line. Top Intel executives now made clear to HP that they were tying Intel's support for the Itanium project to HP's willingness not to market AMD-based business PCs in the commercial and enterprise segments of the market. An internal HP document entitled HP-Intel IPF Situation Summary, dated July 17, 2002, reported that Intel is attempting to link support for IPF to HP's Hammer/Sledgehammer codenames for AMD's Athlon and Opteron microprocessor products usage. A direct threat was delivered by Intel's then COO Paul Otellini, as recorded in an internal HP email. If HP does Hammer an AMD microprocessor, he, Otellini, will redirect development for effort from IPF to 64-bit extensions, an alternative Intel technology, significantly hindering our IPF migration. For HP executives, avoiding the consequences to the Itanium project threatened by Intel was a top priority. Any prospect of dealings with AMD would have to be subordinated to HP's overriding interest in preserving Intel's cooperation on Itanium. A senior HP executive made the point in an internal April 2002 email, "HP and Intel have worked very closely on IPF. We cannot mess that up, as it is the engine for our future systems business. It will be very important that we consider any potential AMD change with our eyes wide open." HP agrees to cap its sales of AMD products. Confronted with Intel's threats to the Itanium project and eager to obtain rebate payments from Intel, HP believed it had no choice but to bend Intel's demands. Accordingly, it negotiated a deal with Intel, which drastically limited its marketing of AMD-based business desktop PCs and added a tremendous rebate payment to its bottom line. First, HP agreed to limit its global sales of AMD-based business desktop PCs to no more than 5% of its total business desktop sales. Second, to meet Intel's concern about enhancing AMD's reputation among enterprise customers, it agreed to limit its marketing of AMD-based products to the small and medium-sized business segment. Third, HP agreed not to use its distributor network to fulfill orders for AMD-based products, but to sell only as many AMD-based products as it could ship directly, something HP was ill-prepared to do at that time. In return, Intel provided $130 million in rebate payments over a 1-year period. Given the serious financial condition of HP's business desktop unit, the Intel payments were critical to HP. This last restriction effectively ensured that HP sales of AMD-based business PCs would never reach even the 5% cap which Intel had required HP to impose. The direct sales method proved to be unsuited to the customer segment, small and medium businesses, at which it was directed, and HP itself did not at any time have the capability to efficiently sell directly to the customer segment. Section 6. Intel punishes and threatens HP for launching AMD-based servers. Paragraph 182. In the period between 2004 and 2006, the relationship between Intel and HP continued to be a difficult one. HP sometimes made limited use of AMD-based products. For example, in February 2004, HP surprised both Intel and its chief competitors, Dell and IBM, by announcing a range of Opteron-based server products. This was a major competitive blow to Intel, which estimated that it put at risk $250 million in prospective Intel revenue in 2004 alone. The threat Intel now faced directly was multifaceted. Intel understood that servers were the basic building blocks of corporate information systems. If AMD could place competitive products in that key position, the rest of the corporate market, which valued compatibility, would be open to them as well. Moreover, in the absence of competition, Intel's policy had been to monopoly price its server products. Those profits were now threatened. The root of the problem for Intel was that the price/performance gap between Intel's server offerings and AMD's was now striking. For some applications, Opteron's technical superiority was so marked that despite everything Intel could do, OEMs were reluctant to completely ignore strong customer demand. Accordingly, HP's actions drew an explicit threat of punishment from Intel. In a meeting with HP, an Intel representative told HP executives that HP's Opteron launch cost Intel billions of dollars and that Intel planned to punish HP for shipping servers with AMD Opteron chips. This threat was relayed in an email dated June 14, 2004, by an HP executive present at the meeting to other HP employees stating, "Intel has told us that HP's announcement on Opteron has cost them several billion dollars and that they plan to punish HP for doing this." Intel then deployed its usual tactics vis-a-vis HP. Offer hundreds of millions of dollars of rebate payments in return for exclusivity, accompanied by threats that it would no longer support the Itanium technology on which HP depended. Section 7. HP's 2006 company-wide agreement with Intel. Paragraph 194. Prior to 2006, the agreements which HP and Intel reached to limit HP's sales and promotion of AMD-based products were generally limited to specific segments of HP's business. In 2006, however, the two companies reached a new, more comprehensive understanding at AMD's expense. In a Memorandum of Understanding dated September 29, 2006, HP agreed to increase Intel's share of its business company-wide in exchange for rebate payments and other valuable benefits to its business. Since 2002, HP had persisted in maintaining a limited relationship with AMD, which brought it repeated criticism from Intel. In a March 2006 email, a senior Intel executive complained that HP was celebrating a 10-year anniversary with our direct competitor and characterized such conduct as a poke in the eye directed at Intel. A senior HP executive emailed back, "This is not a poke in the eye. It really reflects the market situation over the past few years. You and I both know you have been at a price/performance disadvantage. In many cases, you have been trying to close the gap using money in the field." In the spring of 2006, however, HP and Intel began discussion of a new agreement. In August 2006, Intel's Ottolini told senior Intel executives in an email that we need to have a much deeper relationship with HP. "We will have the choice in the next week to sign up to an 07 deal with HP or not. I believe it is in our interest to make this happen, regardless of the near-term issues." On August 25, 2006, Ottolini met with a top HP executive. A deal status summary circulated between the companies in early September outlined what would become the basic structure of the deal. Intel promised hefty cash payments and other benefits to HP in exchange for market share gains. In other words, it was understood that HP would decrease the proportion of x86 microprocessor product it purchased from AMD to Intel's benefit. Intel did what it could to sanitize written versions of the deal terms by asking that references to MSS or market segment share be replaced by volume targets. A September 10, 2006 email from the principal Intel negotiator of the deal to his HP counterpart made this explicit. Could you take the MSS references off and just leave everything at volume targets? Our counsel is very picky on that stuff, and I don't want to infer that we've had conversations about anything other than volume targets or relative volume targets. Thanks. HP obliged. Nevertheless, the substance of the agreement was clear. The deal status memo contemplated that Intel would pay $925 million to HP during HP's 2007 fiscal year. In exchange, HP promised specific Intel market share gains. In its desktop and mobile product lines, HP was willing to provide a 5% Intel market share gain. In some segments of its server business, HP agreed to a 2% Intel increase. In return, HP received, in addition to the rebate payments, other valuable concessions, including favorable changes in supply chain conditions and an Intel promise of profound change in Intel's white box strategy. This referred to the terms on which Intel sold and promoted its products to non-brand name computer manufacturers, which competed with HP. On September 14, 2006, Intel and HP entered into a letter of intent which cast HP's obligation to shift its purchases to Intel in terms of unit volumes, but also provided that those volumes would adjust proportionately in accordance with HP's actual growth. In FY07, HP's fiscal year 2007, HP agrees to direct additional CPU unit volumes to Intel beyond our current vector. In the event that HP TAM, total available market, growth is higher or lower than currently forecast, HP agrees to provide Intel with a proportionate share of the change. Despite Intel's efforts to conceal the substance of its agreement with HP, it is clear that volume targets, which adjust proportionately to increase or decreases in total sales, are, as a mathematical matter, indistinguishable from market share allocations. And a market share allocation, which guarantee that Intel's share of HP's CPU purchases would increase and AMD's would decrease, was what HP and Intel had agreed to. That the agreement had the intended effect was confirmed approximately a year later by top HP officials themselves in a meeting with Ottolini and other Intel executives. HP then told Intel that, judged in total, the agreement is a success for Intel as measured by revenue achievement, market share gain, and knocking AMD back several steps. Section E, Intel's Exclusionary Acts, IBM. Paragraph 202. Intel's dealings with IBM exhibited the same patterns as with Dell and HP. When IBM indicated that it was considering expanding its AMD offerings, Intel's reaction was to threaten to cut subsidies and end important joint projects. This was often followed by offers of increases in payments in exchange for either not launching the AMD product or severely limiting it. IBM considers launching AMD servers. IBM recognized that AMD's Opteron superiority over Intel's offerings had given rise to strong customer demand, including but not limited to the market segment known as high-performance computing, or HPC, computers built to support computationally intensive modeling and simulation programs. Accordingly, in the period of 2003 to 2005, IBM was unwilling to forgo the launch of Opteron-based products entirely, particularly after HP's announcement. but Intel was largely successful in restricting IBM's marketing of those products so that they did not become broad-scale threats to Intel's enterprise business. Intel used two joint ventures between the two companies as pressure points. Intel repeatedly threatened to disrupt these collaborations if IBM marketed its AMD-based products too vigorously. These threats were effective in forcing IBM to limit its promotion of two Opteron-based products launched in 2004 and 2005. In a third instance, in April of 2004, Intel agreed to pay IBM $130 million not to launch an Opteron-based four-way server product, even though Intel, and consequently IBM, had no genuine competitive alternative to offer. The events concerning all three products, a two-way server dubbed the E325, the four-way server which IBM agreed not to launch, the planned E350, and a server in a then-novel configuration called a Blade server, overlapped during 2003 to 2004, and in the case of the Blade server, stretched into 2005. Section 6, Conclusion. Paragraph 252. Intel's illegal conduct has corroded competitive conditions in an economically vital market. It has also deprived New York consumers, businesses, and governmental entities of innovative technology and compelled them to pay prices above competitive levels. Businesses and public entities, including universities in New York and elsewhere, were compelled to purchase Intel-based products, particularly multiprocessor servers used for complex computing tasks, often paid hefty monopoly overcharges. Dell, for example, observed with alarm in September of 2004 that its use of Intel products subjected it to cost disadvantage of $300 to $10,000 in the 4P, four processor server space, and $50 to $300 in the 2P, dual processor server space. Fear of Intel retaliation reversed these healthy incentives. OEM executives were hesitant, if not completely unwilling, to be the first to launch products which competed with Intel. Hundreds of emails from numerous experienced and knowledgeable executives at multiple OEMs give evidence of the climate of fear which Intel has spread throughout the industry. Intel's core message, that OEMs, which promote competition in industry segments it considers vital, will face retaliation, has distorted the competitive process. Appropriate relief should issue which stops Intel's illegal acts, prevents their reoccurrence, and restores to the marketplace the competition Intel has destroyed.